Well, it's Thursday night, and you're listening to Kayak Fishing Radio. I'm Chip Gibson, tree hugger, and man, now the phones are starting to light up. I thought it was just going to be cold and dark and unbearable, but there's our Jersey rep. What's up, Matt?
Hey, good evening, Chip. What's going on?
How are you, dude? Dude, it's like, I think it's warmer there than it is here tonight.
That's possible.
I mean, we're sitting at about
in the 40s right now. So.
You're in the 40s? Oh, we're
yeah.
Already down to 38, man.
Oh man.
Yeah, the it looks like the.
Oh, it says 38. I just checked it.
Oh, okay.
So we're right on par there.
Right on par. I guess the edge is like hitting you guys about the same time. Let's see what it looks like on the north side of Atlanta. Hey, Jim, are you there?
Chilly on the north side and 37 and windy.
37 and windy, huh? We'll have to figure out the wind chill factor.
it's cold. For
us. I put another log on the fire here and hit the thermostat a couple of times. The polar blast is making its way into the southeast and the north and along the coast, I guess. So it's all those Canadians' fault.
Yeah, that's where it came from.
Yeah, it's in Canadians, man. If they would just pay their heating bill. So it's supposed to be 27 here in the morning. Holy cow.
We didn't get the wind yet here, but it's been raining for the past 2 hours. And it's supposed to get a little snow tonight. They're calling for a half inch, but it shouldn't stick since the ground's still warm.
Yeah. Now I don't think they're calling for any snow here. I think it's just the cold and maybe a little frost on the pumpkin in the morning, but I saw a few drops. There were some clouds, and then as I was coming in this evening, it was a few sprinkles on the windshield, but it was still about 42 there. Well, cold weather makes me want to hibernate, man. So
you got to get your snow tires on over there.
You know, after the last Snowmageddon here in Atlanta last year, where 2 inches of snow closed the entire southeastern United States. I actually invested. I kept my eyeballs on the eBay and got a set of chains for my truck. So if it happens again, I'm ready, man. I can pull anybody out. But my buddy
I'll never forget seeing that on the news there. Over there, it looked like a war zone. Like there was cars on the side of the road on fire. I was like, "What's going on over there?"
It was insane, Jim. You know, I mean, up on your end, I think there were people that took them like 5-6 hours to get home from work that day. There were people who slept in their cars overnight.
There were people sleeping in their cars. There were people who worked on the north side who lived down there towards you. One of our friends, it took her 23 hours to get home from work. My wife and about 50 of her best friends spent the night at the fire station about 2.5 miles from our house because some people left their cars on a hill, and the hill had iced over. They didn't have good tires, so they couldn't get up the hill. They couldn't go down the hill. They got sideways. They just left their cars, abandoned their cars, and that clogged up all the traffic.
Yeah. I was escaping from my job site on the north side, headed south. It was starting to get ugly. And once I got off the highway, I just drove in the median or the side of the road. I put it in four-wheel drive. It was muddy, but the truck made it through. Everybody who tried to stay on the road eventually left the road. So.
Yep, it was a mess, an unnecessary mess.
Yeah. Yeah, they should have just closed everything down. But
well,
we typically don't believe the weather guesser.
You know, the other thing, too, is you know, it doesn't snow enough in Atlanta to warrant a significant investment in trucks that are dedicated to spreading salt and snow plows, right? And there's not a lot of people who buy a snow plow and contract themselves out like they do in places like Toronto, Rochester, and Buffalo. But we have lots of garbage trucks. And you can buy plows and put them on the front of garbage trucks, and we have lots of garbage trucks, right? And the plows don't take up much room, and it's not that the investment is much less than buying a truck outfitted for all that. So, you know, you'd think they'd wise up and buy some plows for our garbage trucks, and maybe some spreaders to attach to the back of them and put our garbage trucks out there to kind of help it. But, you know, that's beyond their comprehension, I guess. They do it in northern states. They'll use trucks, right?
Yeah.
That's what they do up here when it's real bad and they don't have enough trucks to cover everywhere.
Yeah.
Yep. Garbage trucks get the plows.
That's right. That's right.
And then the dump trucks, the ones that don't have the plows on them, they're just dedicated to spreading salt.
There you go. So, Kurt Miller said we're going to have a below average cold winter with three major events as far as snow, ice.
Is that right?
That's his prediction. I heard it last week.
Oh.
I was like, great. Another cold winter.
Yeah, it's not good because up here in Jersey, we ran out of road salt last year.
Well,
I've never heard of that happening before.
Well, they've made some serious investments in gravel and trucks and stuff like that since last week, but holy crap. And, you know, actually, when I worked at the airport, we had the best kind of update there because everybody knew what was going to go on there, so... And actually, the airlines had the better weather teams than the actual airfield itself. So the airfield would just, like, call conference calls and have all the airline guys check in and, you know, let them know what was going on. So, but typically when Atlanta gets backed up, it's because of, like, the major ports up in northeast, like Dulles and Baltimore and stuff like that. When they start getting socked in Boston, then everything slows down here in Atlanta. So, but anyways, let's talk about fishing, man. I didn't get to fish last week. Anybody fish? You been out fishing?
I didn't fish last weekend. It was a good weekend. I had to help my pops winterize his boats. So
yeah, got that taken care of
the whole weekend. Yeah, but didn't get out.
Oh,
I did buy a new rifle though.
Yeah,
a new rifle.
I did.
There you go. I got on a plane Thursday night and flew down to St. Simons where my mom and dad and sister are and took that Friday off and did a combination of worked on their technology in their houses. And Friday afternoon we got to fish a little bit, caught about a dozen sea trout. And then we had that full moon on Friday and we had a good 11 or 12 foot tide associated with it. So Saturday, we got the motorized canoe and went up a bunch of small creeks looking for stripers because they like that fast-moving water. And we didn't find any stripers. I think it's too early in the season. So a dozen good sea trout on Friday before the full moon, and then one real heavy sea trout Saturday while we were trolling for stripers. And then I flew back Sunday, so I didn't get to fish Sunday. Like I said, I'm looking forward. Hopefully by Christmas, those stripers will be back in the little creeks that we fishing them for. Has to cool off a little bit later in the year. But the trout, we caught some good trout, sea trout. They were heavy. So they weren't real long, but they were real fat. I don't know what they were eating. But all the ones we kept were, you know, of course, in the proper length, but they have big bellies. They weren't full of eggs. They were just had been feeding up, I guess, for the winter.
Right. So, what'd you catch them on?
No. The ones we caught on conventional tackle, we didn't feel like messing around with live bait, so we just used 1/8 ounce and 1/4 ounce jig heads on spinning rods with a purple grub body. because that water down there is pretty dark, as you well know from being in the boondoggles there in St. Mary's. So we tend to, unless the water is really clear, which it wasn't that clear, we tend to go with darker colors this time of year. So mm-hmm. we caught just about all the trout on basically a purple sassy saltwater assassin. Basically a minnow-shaped grub with a little paddle tail on it. Bigger than a sassy shad, but a saltwater assassin. And then I threw the fly, and I caught a couple on a purple deceiver, and then I caught my biggest one on a little size number 4 gray over tan clouser with pearl crystal flash and black dumbbell eyes, because this time of year the shrimp and crabs go either move out or start to hibernate, and the shrimp move out of the move out past the sound into the deep water, and they're eating glass minnows. And when they're eating those glass minnows, it's pretty hard to catch them. I mean, because they get pretty particular about what they're eating. Because, you know, glass minnows are what? The size of your pinky?
Yeah.
So I found that not using a white belly, but a gray back with a tan belly and a little pearl crystal flash looks a lot like a glass minnow. And I tie them real short. I'm talking about an inch and a half fly. Real short,
right.
You know, almost hard to replicate with a standard grub and jig, because the jig hook is usually much longer than that.
Yeah.
And that works, you know, works off the coast of Georgia all winter, and it works down in the southern part of Florida because they eat glass minnows down there all winter. I mean, it works a lot in the south, that little tan and gray combination, but real short, under 2 inches, you know.
Hmm. So, yeah, it is kind of tough when they start targeting, you know, they get real specific. And Becker's trying to dial in. He says he can't dial in, log in, or anything. Blog Talk Radio is giving him, can't even dial in. It says number not in service. Are we here, or is this a figment of my imagination?
No, we're here. Even as cold as it is, we're still here.
Let's see. So, I'm going to tell him it's on his end. So, yeah, those little glass minnows and stuff, like I said, once it gets targeted on them, it's really hard to turn their nose at anything else. So that's pretty cool. And you say you tie your own? What size hook do you use?
Yeah. For the little glass minnows, I use either a number 4 or a number 6 or a number 8.
Mm-hmm.
You know, fairly small stuff, and throwing it with a fairly, an 8-weight fly rod or a 7-weight fly rod, depends on the wind and how far I have to throw it.
Yeah.
And in the panhandle, if we find a trout schooled up in the intercoastal like you'll do during the winter, I actually go down to like a 6-weight or 5-weight fly rod and to a light action spinning rod, and actually go down to basically a crappie jig, you know, a little 1/8 ounce crappie jig and a little Mr. Twister white or silver little body like you'd fish for a crappie, because they stack in on those glass minnows down there, and you have a heck of a time getting them turned off on anything else. You know, once they get on, like I said, when they get on those glass minnows in the winter, they get so keyed into that little small bait that you just can't, they won't do anything else. You know, you throw a gulp at them or a DOA or something like that, and they just, you know, you might be able to sink it down and catch a bigger one, or maybe if there's some reds hanging around, you might be able to snag a red. But it's kind of interesting to watch how they get so focused on that. But, you know, a lot of places there's nothing else to eat
with
those glass minnows. Everything else going out in deep water.
Looks like he's making it in. So, yeah, I've heard, you know, you downsize your baits during the cold months, or either go real big so that the fish decide, I'm going to spend a little energy here to get a good meal. But I never thought about that, man, trying crappie jigs. on a spinning reel for who's that now? Well, it looks like Chuck there. Is that you, Chuck?
Yo.
It's the Redfish Chuck, man. How are you, sir?
Good, sir. How are you?
Good. We were just chatting. My buddy Jim here, North Atlanta. He was down there on the coast. You were in Georgia, right, Jim?
Yeah, St. Simon's down the coast.
Yeah, he was catching some big trout. Fat trout, not long trout, fat trout. Catching them on the fly this past weekend, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I seen...
I like fat, dumb fish.
Yeah, fat, dumb fish, man. It's fine. But I saw Mark Namovitz and his buddy there on Good Morning America today. They were playing with their big hammerhead shark there off Port St. Lucie.
Yeah, that was awesome. Brian Nelly and Mark have been doing work out there on the ocean, catching a bunch of nice fish. And that was a pretty cool encounter they had capture on video.
Yeah, the media makes it out like, oh, it's all so dangerous and everything. It's like, it's cool when a shark follows you around, except for the fact that you can't catch any fish. But
right.
Get some cool video.
Yeah.
And I mean, unless you're a tarpon, a hammerhead's no danger.
Yeah. Definitely cool to watch it track them and get close and, you know, have a couple of look-sees and then get close again and then back off and then get close again. Like, it was just thinking about it, you know?
Nah, he was just, like, thinking. He was, like, he was just swimming with some buddies is what he was doing.
You wouldn't be catching me to put my feet in the water when that thing's around.
No, I wouldn't be dragging my feet in water, no.
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 We used
what's
to...
funny is outside of... I was going to say what's funny is outside of Port Canaveral, I don't think there's ever a day where I want to stick my feet in the water. I've caught too many sharks along that beach to ever even think about it.
Yeah. One of the last times I was in the boat out of Pensacola, taking a wife and the clone there, we were offshore, we were on a rig. We had dropped the hook and we were fishing bottom for snapper and stuff, and it was hot that day and we were sitting on one side of the rig catching fish and there was about six other boats on the other side of the rig and they weren't catching anything, and then she decided she was going to go for a swim. And about the time she got up on the gunwale, you know, to get ready to jump in the water, I seen the big fin come up between the boats, you know, make a big cut through, and I said, you know, you might want to wait till the hammerhead swims away before you go jumping in. But
that's funny.
We have more barracuda, though, and I never trust a barracuda.
No.
You know,
no,
I mean,
I've
had them hit the side of the boat, you know, going after a fish that I was pulling in and stuff, you know, that, and just cut the fish in half right as you're trying to pull it up out of the water. It's like, it's those guys never liked being in the water with cudas.
Well, did I tell you my story about the shark that ended up in the back of the Outback?
Oh, no,
This is one of those Good Morning America moments. If I had a camera rolling, probably the only time I've ever, like, been scared after the fact, after knowing what had happened, I was scared. Like, I wasn't scared when it happened because I didn't know what was happening. But Alex Gritschke and I and a couple other guys were out fishing off the beach, and mullet run was in full force. And literally you couldn't cast in any direction and not hook something, whether it was a bluefish or a Spanish mackerel or a jack or a redfish or a snook or whatever. And I'm reeling in a bluefish. I'm just about to lift it into my lap. Or was it a jack? It doesn't matter. Anyway, just about to lift the fish into my lap, and I look away, and all of a sudden I feel the whole back end of the boat kind of sink for a second, and rock to the left, and then rock back to the right, and then rock back to the left again, and it all happened really quick. It was like, boom, right, and just real fast. And I turn around and look, and Alex Gritchke's eyes were the size of dinner plates. And he was just like, dude, that was a 6-plus-foot black tip shark that was just in the back of your kayak. So apparently what had happened was the shark came out of the water after the fish when I was lifting it into my boat and charged after it, landing in the back of the boat. I had a Yeti cooler behind my back as a backrest for the Outback, and it hit the cooler and kind of stuck there for a second, like just laid across the back of the cockpit there and rocked himself off the side of the boat. I turned with just enough time to see something fall back into the water with lots of teeth in his face.
Nice.
And that's when Alex was like, dude, you should have seen it. And it was crazy, but long story short.
At least it was in the back of your kayak and not in your lap.
Yeah.
Yes, this is true. But yeah, it was pretty hair raising. I mean, pretty crazy. You know, we've had some close calls. We were fishing outside of the port one time, not in the kayaks. It was at night. We were snook fishing, and we were using like 10 and 11 inch mullet for bait. And the bioluminescence was really, really thick. And so every time a school of mullet would rush away from an approaching predator, the predator and the mullet would all light up. And we were circled, literally completely circled by sharks right off the beach, right off the tip of the jetty. And the next day when we went out, we were fishing during the day, it was the same thing. Sharks were everywhere. If you lost sight of your fish below view, so say he ran for the bottom, he was gone. And I look over, my buddy's on a paddle board, and he's got his feet dangling off either side, and I'm like, dude, you're done, lost your mind. I mean, it was crazy. Oh, well.
Yeah. People think, you know, people don't realize, you know, that it's, you know, it's a dangerous thing that we do. I say that tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, I mean, there's been some incidences in the past. Like, wasn't there a woman that was, like, a year or two ago, last year, year before last, she got impaled down in the Keys by some houndfish that jumped out of the water and nailed her, and then... I seem to recall last summer or something, there was a video that was on one of the Good Morning shows. It was a YouTube thing where some guy was standing on the side of a center console and either a wahoo or a king comes rocking in the boat, you know. And you put somebody's eye out with a kingfish, man.
We've had barracudas and kingfish. Both skyrocket right next to the boat as you're flipping a pogie off the side of the boat. Like before the pogie even hits the water, they must be sitting right next to the boat waiting for something to happen, and they just come flying out of the water. And it literally will take your breath away because you don't really know exactly what's going on because it all happens so fast. But yeah, it's happened a few times to us.
All you see is teeth coming out, right?
All you see is like a missile leaving the water at you know, 60 miles an hour and then shooting like 8 feet higher than your T-top before it finally lands back in the water again. It is pretty crazy.
Yeah. If you've never been trolling and see a king or a wahoo, I mean, kings are the ones that do the big skyrocket, and I don't think I've ever seen a wahoo jump, but I know they will.
I've had one do it.
But I mean, I've seen kings, you know, where you're standing at the helm under the T-top, like you say, and you look back, you hear the reel go off, and you look back, and the line is going up in the air, and the fish is higher than your T-top, you know, back in the spread there, and you're like, what the heck? You know, it's like you think maybe a gull came and grabbed your bait or something, and you see the king come back down out of the air and hit the water. So, pretty interesting.
We had I used to have a Stamos, a 27-foot center console, and we took my brother-in-law's family from Kentucky. We took them out offshore fishing for the first time. They'd never been offshore before, and it was kind of a slow day, whatever. We're dragging baits out by the 20-mile buoy that we have out here, and you know, sometimes you look back in the spread when you're trolling, if you've ever trolled, excuse me, and you're looking at a particular ballyhoo that's swimming just perfect, and you know it's about to get eaten, you're just like, God, that thing's got to get hit. And we're going along, and I told my brother-in-law's uncle, I said, watch that bait, that outrigger bait. Something's gonna crush it any minute now. Usually when you pull past the buoy, you at least catch a barracuda, right? And to them, a barracuda would have been, like, the most awesome thing ever, because all they ever catch is, like, perch and brim and stuff. So we're pulling along, and all of a sudden a 60-pound wahoo comes flying out of the water with the bait in his mouth. And when I say this fish probably made it 20 feet in the air, I'm not exaggerating at all. I mean, he must have come up from 60, 70 feet down, hit that bait, and never missed a beat. The craziest part about those, any of them, kingfish, any of those fish, when they do that, the second they hit the water, it's like overdrive. It's like they don't need any time to kind of like recoup and figure out what just happened. It's like this, like they're already wagging their tails as they're about to hit the water, because as soon as he hit the water, he almost dumped it 30 wide. And it was, but it was pretty awesome to see that, you know. But there you go. That's my story.
That's your story, yeah. Well, let me say hi to Mr. Becker. He's joined us here from the western coast there of Florida.
The west armpit of Florida. Yes, that's correct.
The west armpit? No, that's not the west armpit. I mean, you got to get up near Cedar Key to get in the armpit.
Oh, that's true. That is true. Good evening, everybody.
Yeah.
Sorry, so, I was late.
Sorry you was late. Well, if you can't get in, you can't get in. I mean, I don't know what. I mean, I know last night that Wheeler was having some problems checking in and getting online, so his show didn't make it in. BTR was kind of messing with him. So, how's the West Coast?
It's here.
Yeah.
Beautiful day today. Another nice day tomorrow, and then cold front. Well, we got a little bit cold front dropping in, you know, just in time for the weekend. And then another big one on Tuesday. It's going to get down, not quite in single digits, but it's going to get close. So.
Yeah, I was looking at the weather map for temperatures, and everywhere in the United States was blue except for Southern California and Florida. You guys, it was all yellow and red over there.
Well, hopefully it won't kill the snook again. Hopefully it won't have a big snook kill.
Well, that one was preceded by like a week of really cold weather, right? So the water temperatures were already down. So, you know, it's like, you know, nothing's been cold enough here long enough for you know, water temperatures to take a huge dip. So, I mean,
yeah, we still have tarpon cruising around, so we're still good down here.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, Chuck, have you heard any word on the adventure fishing tournament? I know Woody was supposed to have a meeting a couple weeks or a week after the boondoggle, but I haven't heard anything about it. Have you?
Yeah, no, I haven't heard anything either. Last I heard was that it was going to take place back in Flamingo, but I don't know.
Yeah, I talked to him there at the boondoggle, and he said that it looked like they were going to do Flamingo again. So I'm thinking about, you know, going down for the February boondoggle, and I got a campsite for the week, thinking, yeah, I might as well just stay there.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It kind of stinks because I'm going to have to choose between one or the other.
Yeah.
You know, I can't do both, can't take that much time off of work, but I'm actually trying to get down to Flamingo right after Christmas.
We're gonna be down that way. We're gonna be at Sugarloaf Key during the Christmas holidays. Gonna try to fish the keys. Yeah.
Hmm.
So
might change my game plan.
Might change the game plan a little bit.
Yeah.
So possibly. Yeah, we'll be at the campground there on Sugarloaf. So thought I might give the what is that little cove there? I can't remember the name of it now. But I think there's a pretty good flat. The campground sits like right on the water there and stuff. So, but give us a fishing report, Chuck, man. Jim said he went fishing in St. Simons and caught some fat trout and that the stripers weren't there yet. Matt didn't get to fish last week. I don't know. Greg, did you get to fish?
Negative Ghost Rider.
Negative Ghost Rider. The pattern is empty.
I've been doing the Monday Fun Day thing.
The Monday Fun Day?
Monday Fun Day, basically. My shop's closed on Mondays.
Okay.
So that's really my day to fish. So a couple of weeks ago, we had an opportunity, me and a couple of my buddies had an opportunity to go look at some private property in South Volusia County, which is the county just north of me. And on that piece of property, there are several ponds or small lakes that used to be rock quarries, and they're full of bass. They've got bass in them, and some of them have hybrid bass in them, and there's giant brim the size of my hand, which if you know me, then you know how big my hands are. It's a pretty big brim, but anyhow, so we've been playing around with that a little bit. There's some business aspects to this piece of property that we're interested in. So we've been doing a little bit of low sodium stuff the last couple of weeks, but today, a buddy of mine, Stephen Lester, who owns and operates, Old Ford Outdoors. Sorry. He got out today with a buddy of ours, Ty Nelson, and Ty got his first redfish on fly from a kayak today.
Cool.
Belly crawler. Yep. In a mosquito lagoon, belly crawler. Super shallow, back half out of the water, that kind of thing. That's been going on nonstop for probably the last, I would say, month and a half. All the redfish are starting to transition into a different feeding pattern. Our mullet run is pretty much over and non-existent. There's still some kind of hanging around, but the mass numbers of fish aren't here anymore. So our fish are kind of in a transitional period now where they're starting to hone in more on the crustacean-based diet and smaller thin fish like mud minnows and things like that. Our big trout have just been, this year has been the most ridiculous year I've ever seen for big trout. I was talking to a customer of mine today, Steve Davidson, and we were talking, he's from Virginia area, and we were talking about big trout, and he was like, yeah, you know, we used to catch some big trout up there. I said, no. Big trout or big trout down here. Like when you catch a big trout, we're talking a 20, not even a 25, a 28 to 34 inch trout is a big trout. 25 inch trout's pretty standard anymore. You know, anything over 20 inches is still a beautiful fish, but you know, not even picture worthy really anymore. But there's just been such an overabundance of giant trout. So if you remember a couple of years ago when you guys were down and we got to go fish the aquarium and all those trout you've seen scooting around, well, they've all had a good solid year and a half or so to plump up and get even bigger. And they're starting to stage in that same general area. So getting real excited about that. Usually that spot doesn't really turn on until the end of December, beginning of January. That's my New Year's Day location of choice. You know, I'll go there on New Year's Day to start the new year off right and catch a 25-plus inch trout on topwater. And, you know, it's almost a given. Just go there, throw a topwater plug, and it's going to happen. But with that being said, I no longer throw spinning rods. So it's going to have to be a gurgler or some sort of a topwater popper that I'm going to have to make, because I've dedicated 2015, the rest of 2014 and all of 2015 to nothing but fly. So that'll be interesting. But yeah, fishing down here has been great. We've had, for guys who are kind of landlocked too or shore-based, the jetty out at Port Canaveral, the Jetty Park Pier has been on fire every single night with giant redfish. So guys are catching 40-plus inch redfish every single night out there. There's a monstrous school of them that are sitting offshore right now out there spawning. And at night they come in towards the jetties and guys are just wailing on them. So lots of stuff to be caught right now. It's good.
Nice. Very cool. Well, it sounds very interesting. I guess maybe I should take some more time off.
take more time off and come down.
Yeah,
that
I know,
property,
right?
That we're looking at, got a cabin on it. That property we're working on, it's got a little, I call it an efficiency cabin. It's basically a trailer that's built to look like a little cabin. It's got a kitchen, it's got a little like little seating area, then it's got a bedroom, it's got a little loft with a couple of air mattresses and a bathroom and a shower. And I think part of our plan is to possibly rent it out to folks for the weekend who want to come down or come over or whatever from, you know, out of town. And it basically puts you at State Road 3 on the way out of the refuge out onto US 1. So if you're familiar, I know you are familiar with State Road 3, which is the road that runs past Biolab and Haulover and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Out by Mosquito Lagoon, it would leave you with a short 5 to 10 minute drive to Beacon 42.
Nice.
So, I mean, there's plenty of room for campers if we wanted to put a few RVs out there. There's no hookups, but I think there's one hookup on the property, but tent camping and all that kind of stuff, it may be an opportunity for some of that kind of thing too, which, again, once you come in and you close the gates behind you, it's private property, so, I mean, you want to come out and bring some firearms and shoot some firearms, you can do that. You want to come out and hunt some deer and hunt some turkeys, you can do that. You want to, you know, whatever you want to kind of do on the piece of property. So there will be opportunities going forward for folks coming into town that want to fish locally.
Cool. Is it on the lagoon or?
No, it's across. It's on the west side of US-1, so it's
uh-huh.
literally like. I mean, if you stood at the front gate and looked down US-1 to the north,
right.
You're probably 200 yards or so. You can, if you Google Earth it, you can see the property. It's pie-shaped, and it's full of ponds. And we may or may not have some river species that are living in one of the ponds.
Hmm.
So, yeah. It's going to be fun. It's going to be an interesting little setup. I mean, we went out there the other day and took some machetes with us because some of it's overgrown, and went and checked out some things. And being that they're old rock quarries, it's really deep water. I'm throwing fly, so I didn't have a sinking line with me. I'm in 30 feet of water, not knowing what the heck to do with myself. But, you know, it's, yeah, interesting.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very neat. And that's, I'm looking at it here. So is it where 3 and 1 intersect up there in the corner? Is that where it's at?
It's just south of that on the west side of the road. I mean, you can't
on the west.
The property is the only property that's got 5 or 6 ponds on it that are pretty close connected. There's some hardwoods you can see on the right-hand side of the property, and then there's some hardwoods in the very back corner that parallel with the railroad tracks.
Hmm.
Yeah. You'll see, like, there's a little overpass thing that's just south of where 3 and 1 intersect.
Yeah.
There's a little overpass coming back south.
Yeah.
It's before the overpass and before what looks like a fish farm, because it is a fish farm.
That's the Inland Ocean. That's the guy that has the Barramundi ponds, isn't
it? Right. He doesn't have Barramundi. He's got redfish, pompano, and tilapia, I think. But it's the property that meets that. So if you go north from that just a smidge, all those bigger ponds that are there, that's it.
Hmm. Those don't look natural.
Yeah. No, they're definitely not natural. They're rock quarries. So
they've
been dug out, and you know, but like I say, every one of them's got fish in it. Some of the ponds allegedly have 8, 9, 10, and 12 pound bass in them. I haven't seen them yet. But then again, I'm throwing fly. I mean, if I was out there throwing crankbaits and stuff like that, I might would find them, or throwing shiners or something. But there's definitely some decent fish in there, though.
Need some of them big old giant redfin shiners, man. Some of them are about 12 inches long.
Well, we go out on this one. There's a dock on one of the ponds, and we call it the goldfish pond because, I mean, literally, it's not even, like, fair. You just walk out with anything at all that's small and brown and twitch it through the water, and this little hybrid bass will smack it, sunshine bass, whatever you want to call them. They'll smack that lure just as fast as it hits the water. There's literally thousands of them in there. And there's some big, big brim in that pond. And I've watched big 6 to 9 pound bass come up and smash those brim right there off the dock. So I know there's some big fish in there. I mean, it just looks fishy. You know what I'm saying? It's got that feel to it. But those rock quarries are old. They've been there for a long time, so...
This is just a new venture for the outfitter shop there?
Yeah, it's something a little different, you know. The shop itself is doing pretty well. And, I was presented with this opportunity to kind of get on board with it. I think that the bigger picture is to do, like I say, have an opportunity for folks to come down who don't want to stay in a hotel and don't want to stay, like, in a little, you know, those little motel hotels on US-1, which are kind of shady.
Right.
This will give somebody, an angler, this will give an angler an opportunity to come down, stay on a piece of property that's private. He pretty much has his pick of any pond he wants to fish in, if he wants to go freshwater. And then he can just jump right across the highway with his truck, go straight to the lagoon, you know. So it's almost like you could do a lagoon morning, bass evening kind of thing, if you wanted to. Or just do nothing but lagoon fishing. But the close proximity to the lagoon is, I think, what intrigues me the most, because there's nothing, as you know, up there, anywhere up there for you to camp. So, it's got some possibilities. It's just a matter of us figuring out exactly how we're going to go about doing it, you know.
Cool.
But, yeah, fun stuff.
Fun stuff. All right. Well, I think, Chuck, you're in the only place in the States right now that's warm enough to have any kind of fun. So the rest of us are setting, you know, getting ready to crack up the furniture and set it on fire to stay warm. So, but
you guys,
that's one of the
vicariously through us down here.
That's right. We will do that. Matt is just, he's getting ready to, Matt's getting ready to put his boats under snow for the winter. So
I fired up the snowblower when I got home from work today just to make sure it would start.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that means.
It's kind of like a lawnmower, but the blade goes the other direction.
No. I'm kidding. I was born in Long Island, so yeah, I've experienced snowblowers before. That does suck, though. I'm anxiously awaiting the arrival of my PA-17. So, this entire the rest of the winter and all of spring will be interesting. We're doing a lot of filming and a lot of photography with this little venture we're doing. So, as far as Only Fly, we're actually going to put out a webisode/DVD. We'll have a DVD available at the end of the thing. Pretty much just going to pick apart the state and catch as many species of fish on fly as we can. So,
right. Huh.
That'd be cool.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, it's about time for me to go into homework checking mode and, just kind of, this is the way it goes here at, on the Buzzard's Row. Talk, then the time is just flying by. So, Matt, what's your game plan, man? Are you just still winterizing stuff for the rest of the year and that's it, man? Or are you waiting for the stripers to start running?
Well, supposedly the stripers are running. They're killing them out on Long Island, so I might take a trip out there this weekend if it's not too windy. Or the other side of it is I might go down to Delaware because they're catching 15-pound tog down there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all depends on the wind. It's supposed to be northwest 20 to 25 on Saturday, so
uh-huh.
I don't know if I want to burn the gas. We'll see.
Right. Okay. Cool. Well, if you do, we'll expect a report next week. See how it went, man.
Indeed. You know,
15-pound tog sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, sounds like getting anchored pretty good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
So. And,
I'll let you know.
Okay, man. Jim, how about you, man? What's your game plan? You going to head back to the coast or?
No, this weekend I've got some chores that I need to do. And I'll probably, since it's getting dark so early, I'll probably tie some flies for my Christmas trip.
Nice.
I'm going to tie some more invitations. I think we're going to go to the coast for Christmas and slide further south, maybe towards Naples. And I've got all my stuff tied for the Naples trip, but I want to tie some more stuff for my St. Simon's trip. Some more small glass minnows for the sea trout.
Right.
And I've got some fairly large stuff I tied for stripers up here, but I might tie a few more striper flies if they do, when we're down there for Christmas, if they have shown up by then, which they should have. I'm going to need they're eating 12-inch mullet, so I need to tie a few half and halves, a couple of bigger deceivers or something with a little bulk to it.
Right. Put a lot of flash on it.
Yeah, because, you know, that water down there is, you only got 3 inches of visibility on a good day. So,
right.
I'll tie some stuff, a little bit flashier stuff, maybe some big whistlers and some big half and halves. But it's going to be chilly up here this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be real cold this weekend. So I don't think I'll even go outside. I'll just be wimp. Sit in front of the fire. So
that sounds like a good deal.
Yeah, it sounds like a plan to me, man. So all right. Well, I think that's about it. Chuck, man, you're hanging in there. You're gonna kick off the week next week with Monday night show. What's the game plan?
We're gonna talk a little bit more fly stuff. I think what I'm going to start doing is leading a little bit in the beginning of the show into the fly talk and then rounding it out with some conventional stuff. I know I can't, talk exclusively about fly on the show, otherwise I'll lose some folks. But, it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks down here. We're waiting to see what Monday is going to bring as far as some rain. We might get some rain, and not that that will stop me from fishing, but it could definitely change up what the plan will be, but that I'm sure I'll just be wrapping up my Monday Funday and then talking about our adventure we've got planned for next year as far as the filming stuff and photography and whatnot. So all good things,
cool.
My friend, all good things. The downtown district of Titusville is coming back to life again, finally. So
yeah.
If anybody's looking for a place to go and take the family or whatever, you still got NASA's still open, obviously, Kennedy Space Center. You can go out there and check that out. And then we've got our own microbrewery now in town, which is cool. Just opened up, Playlinda Brewery. And then we've got a popcorn shop and all kinds of things. It's getting kind of touristy around here. I like it.
Yeah. All right. We have to get them to, brew up some kind of special Redfish Chuck beer or something.
I actually, one of my customers, a young guy, one of my customers, his girlfriend, her uncle owns the brewery. And I was talking to her, and I was like, maybe
there
we
you
get
go.
A special kayak fishing radio brew or something like that. And she's like,
KFR Blue or something
like
that.
Yeah, KFR Brew or something. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Make it like
right.
A really strong IPA.
Good, yeah, we could do that. I'm always in for a little something like that. All right. Very cool. Well, guys, I think let me see if Greg is unmuted. He's You going to say goodnight, Greg? I don't know if he's... I think he's just in listen mode. He was having a little technical difficulty at the beginning, but we can forgive him that. He's still overcome. There he is. He just kind of zoomed through the room.
I did. Yeah. Sorry about that.
No worries, man. We just want to give you an opportunity to say goodnight. Shameless plugs for advertisements or anything like that.
Nothing to plug aside from looking forward to getting back out on the water. Hopefully that's going to happen in the next couple weeks or so, and we'll look forward to seeing folks out there.
All right. Well, that'll be about it for the night then. And we're going to do Chuck's going to kick it off on Monday night. Maybe Wheeler will be able to get back online next week, and then we'll be back here again. It seems like it's just like, bam, another Thursday is here and another Thursday night is gone. So everybody stay warm. Thanks, everybody. Matt, Chuck, Greg, Jim, we'll see you guys next weekend. Be safe out on the water. Wear your PFDs. And stay warm. And we'll see you next week.
I just looked outside and it is snowing out.
Oh, Matt. It's terrible. All right, then, man. Stay warm, and we'll see you guys next week. Kayak Fishing Radio. Take a kid fishing, because that's the best thing. All right, we're out. Good night.